Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Parts Unknown, the show that looks back at the WrestleManias of yore, celebrating the triumphs and bemoaning the tragedies. This week we're talking all things WrestleMania 18, or X8 if you were on brand back in 2002. The Sky Dome in Toronto was the venue for the granddaddy of them all. We're a few years away from the grandest stage of them all becoming common parlance. It was just the second time the WWF, as was, had run a WrestleMania at the venue following Mania 6, and just like on that night, it was the Hulkster who stole the show. It wasn't just everyone's biggest disappointment who was in action, though. His bout with The Rock was the main talking point of the show. Also on the card, Triple H and Y2J met in the acronym Derby with the Undisputed title on the line. Steve Austin was thrilled to be facing Scott Hall. The Undertaker and Ric Flair bled excessively for our entertainment. Thanks, lads. Hometown hero Edge took on Booker T in the Ultimate Grudge match. DDP got a WrestleMania moment, and the hardcore belt got passed around like a very painful hot potato. If you don't know, you should know. My name is Matt Davis Adams, and alongside me today are a man whom I have no doubt actually is in the top 1%, Carl Anker.
Hello, everyone.
Our very own pirate princess, fresh off the red eye to make this booking like a true pro, it's Anton Tolui.
Hello there.
And the doctor of wrestling, Carrie Dunn, baby!
Hello!
NXT theme to this week's intros, as you might have spotted. I know you're such a big fan of the Undisputed Era as well, Carrie, so I thought you'd enjoy that.
I adore them. They're a store brand version of the NWO, and I adore them.
Would you like a quick rebuttal, doctor?
I am still stuck at telling them apart. Adam Cole looks like a cross between Shawn Michaels and Edge.
Yes.
But kind of shrunk. And the other two I can't identify from a lineup.
Okay,
three.
Well.
There's three.
Oh, because Roderick Strong joined, didn't he? Roderick Strong is the most nondescript wrestler in the history of wrestling.
Correct.
Let's get
that's
back.
That's why you like them.
Yeah, it's great.
Cool theme song.
Plays guitar with the belt.
Yeah. Thank you to Brandon Stroud, who I believe he wrestling writer for Uproxx, who basically said the Adam Cole Bebe chant is the smark version of Marco Polo.
Very good. Let's get back to WrestleMania 18. It took place just before the brand extension. The wheels will be set in motion for the next night on Raw. So we've got JR and Jerry Lawler calling the action all night long. The pay-per-view portion of the show opens up with the band Saliva kicking things off with an absolute racket. Apparently the song is called Superstar. Give me a warbled version of America the Beautiful any day. That was the start of the show, but let's go straight to the main event. Not the last match, but the real main event. The bout around which the show was built. Icon versus Icon. Hollywood Hulk Hogan versus The Rock, a dream match, the WWE's version of Mike Tyson versus Muhammad Ali, so we're told. Hogan was supposed to be the heel here. That's not how it turned out there, Carrie. He got a booming reaction when he came to the ring.
Yeah, I hadn't seen this before, and this is kind of watching it all in one go, and I was so puzzled at the placing of this, and then I kind of thought in my head, because Triple H, and then it all made sense again. But yeah, this was really odd to me. I wasn't expecting this at all. And yeah, and then the Hall and Nash running and, oh, yeah, I don't even know what to say about this.
Running might be a rather grandiose term for something involving Kevin Nash.
Kevin
but
Nash,
yeah, we take your point. Mr. Sports Entertainment, Carl Anker, were you sports entertained? I mean, it took us a long time to get any actual wrestling in this match.
I watched on mute. So the long-standing consensus from a lot of people whose wrestling opinions I admire and respect is that this match is a fantastic, amazing, perfect WrestleMania spectacle with the sound on. You put on mute. Oh, my God. It's unbelievably hokey. So went off to watch the whole match on mute. The moment theme music stops, mute, you watch it. There is so much staring at each other and sharply looking left and right. And it's so cartoony. And yes, you shouldn't rank a wrestling match on what it's like if they were in front of an empty crowd, because the crowd is a very, very key ingredient into wrestling matches. This is a unique bottled lightning match that you could never replicate ever again. And they tried to with Rock Cena and it didn't work, because it's a testament to how skilled The Rock and Hulk Hogan are at turning a crowd around. And it's also a testament to how good both of those two are with limited ring nous, I'd say. Hulk Hogan, you know, by all accounts, Hulk Hogan isn't particularly great in-ring technician. The main reason why his leg drop comes off an Irish whip is because he couldn't nail it off the top rope. But when he gets a crowd connected, he can turn them left and right and make them believe what they want to believe. And I said it before, I always pop when he goes, "You!" Because Hulk Hogan, unfortunately, is good at his job.
Anton, I mentioned WrestleMania 6, and we'll get to that in a couple of months' time, probably, and the whole Hogan Warrior thing that happened after there. This was like history repeating itself. How do you think Rock felt going into this as the face? I mean, was it the crowd that made him the heel, or was it what Hogan was doing in the ring and maybe in the build as well?
I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the pop that was going. I remember watching this at the time, and this whole WrestleMania, even though it probably wasn't ranked anywhere near the top, actually kind of resonates with me, because I used to play Shot Your Mouth, a computer game, so much when I was about sort of 16, 17, and most of the storylines are based around this WrestleMania, and it's a brilliant computer game. So for this, the build-up was actually quite good. The whole, you know, NWO coming back, mixing with the McMahons, his lethal dose of poison and all that kind of thing, and it was kind of silly with the whole, you know, rocking an ambulance, and there was a good build to it anyway. But actually, he didn't need any of it, because the crowd just wanted to see Hogan. And they wanted to see Hogan at the peak, and they wanted to see him have one more WrestleMania big match. And I think we saw it later WrestleManias with Rock and Austin. Rock really appreciates when someone takes him to a higher level, not in the ring, doesn't necessarily matter about that, but when the spotlight is increased and more people have their eyes on him, and it elevates sports entertainment into the mainstream as well. I think Rock, more than anyone else, loves that. So I don't think he'd have had, and Rock's said him previously in interviews, he likes being the heel. He actually feels more comfortable being a heel a lot of the time. So I think he'd absolutely love this.
As we're going through, Carrie, there's bits that happen in WrestleManias, and they can be like decades apart, where you go, ah, okay. And when we were talking about the recent ones where Rock's like squashing Eric Rowan and all that kind of thing, you think, Terry taught you that, didn't he? Because he did that to you.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what Anton's saying about kind of the spotlight as well, because I think this kind of working on the big stage and being able to respond to your audience like that, and it not being so much about your wrestling, but about the story that you're telling and being able to kind of respond well to that spotlight, is what distinguishes your big WWE mainstream stars from the people who are just kind of big in WWE. So I texted you guys this week and said that my boyfriend had texted me and said, who's that famous wrestler? Is he dead? And I said, which famous wrestler do you mean? He said, the one that's not The Rock. And he meant Hulk Hogan. They're the two famous wrestlers that he knows. And I think that this kind of encapsulates that almost. These are the two that people would know. If you just show people pictures if they don't watch wrestling. And I think this entire match is kind of an encapsulation of that.
You know, The Rock looks like an athlete. You know, he looks like a professional, sort of a pro footballer and that kind of thing. Whereas Hogan is what? You know, he's a guy with a blonde tash and a black beard and a shiny head and peroxide horseshoe mullet. And, like, you think he's either... You look at him in the street, you either think he's on a certain type of list or... Or he's an extra from one of the Ups and Downs of a Handyman films from the 70s. He doesn't look like an athlete. He doesn't look like somebody you instantly want to cheer for. He looks a bit weird and it looks a bit odd. And yet, he's the most successful person this industry has ever produced. It's really odd.
Well, just finally on this, Carl, we spoke last week about Rock versus Austin, and we were all in agreement that that was kind of a special occasion, good match, etc. Where does this sit in terms of Rock's WrestleMania offerings?
In the canon, it's top five, absolutely. The Stone Cold matches, 1 and 2, those are Rock's best matches at WrestleMania. Then it's this one. I joked about how, yeah, Put the Sound Off is terrible, but if you watch a lot of matches with the sound off, you'll think Dean Malenko is the greatest thing that's ever been in wrestling. Dean Malenko was fine. There are so many different components to what make a good wrestling match and what makes a great moment, and also, very specifically, what makes a great moment at WrestleMania. So what makes a good match at WrestleMania isn't necessarily what makes a good match at Raw, isn't what necessarily makes a great match at Survivor Series, or isn't necessarily what makes a great match at SummerSlam. And this is maybe one of the best WrestleMania stories of two big people with crossover appeal, young lion, old lion, come together, fan perception changes, those two people in ring change perception and go out and have a entertaining spectacle, is what I'll use to describe it. Not a fantastic match, but an entertaining spectacle. And yeah, I was thoroughly sports entertained, even with the sound off.
Yeah, if you haven't watched it in a while, go back and watch it again, because it really is a very, very unique thing. And we'll move on to the title match next. The undisputed title, as was, Chris Jericho came in as the defending champ, having won the WCW, or World Heavyweight, as they called it, and the WWE titles at Vengeance in December 2001. He famously beat The Rock and Steve Austin in the same night. This match went on last, by which point the crowd was spent, having used up all their energy on that Rock Hogan bout that we spoke about. Word is that Trips felt it should go on last, because the title match always should, and under do with him being in the title match whatsoever. Gary, it was like it was an all right match, but it just had no heat and it was a bit too long. And like, if it had been two matches before Rock Hogan, you'd have gone, oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was fine. But yeah, you're absolutely right. After you've had Hogan Rock, this is essentially another cool down match, isn't it? The only thing that is notable about it for me is the fact that Stephanie is dressed as a reject from the cast of Mamma Mia, which I quite enjoyed.
Anton, did we ever find out what happened to Triple H's dog Lucy? For those who are unfamiliar, in the Bills, Jericho was kind of associated with Steph, but essentially her lackey. Triple H and Steph had got divorced in storyline in this time, and as part of the settlement, for some reason, Steph had got Triple H's dog Lucy, who Jericho was supposed to take for a walk, but ended up tying to a limousine, and it got ran over.
Ran over there. In this storyline, there was what? A divorce, wrecked cars, fake pregnancies, sledgehammers, and an apparently dead dog. I mean, pure ridiculousness. But, you know, the whole Jericho and Steph thing, them sneering together, they looked brilliant. They looked like that kind of archetypal sort of evil character that you expect in wrestling. And it was fun. I enjoyed that, those two together, actually. I didn't actually make the most of it, really. I think it was quite a lot of fun. The whole ridiculousness with Triple H kind of almost took a back seat. So I was really interested in their relationship, because they're both so good at being just brilliant at being bad guys and sort of likable assholes, really. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, the storyline didn't really make any sense. The match was okay, but it was all very weird as well, because it kind of felt like the match was just basically building up to Triple H wanting to pedigree Steph. That's effectively what it was. And he was getting really cheered on by a very male section of the crowd. Clearly, you know, the guys that have been dumped or were overlooked by the popular girls at school, or the guys that recently their wives left them and they're not allowed to see their kids at the weekend. Go on, yeah, get it, women are... And it was all a bit weird, really. It was all just felt up towards Triple H, basically, you know, about to pedigree the woman a year later he would marry in real life. It's, oh, wrestling's weird, isn't it?
Lest we forget him implying that his would-be wife had an excessively large vagina in the build as well, which was Attitude Era. Carl, for people who haven't seen this, describe just how orange Triple H was.
He is mahogany. Not quite deep Vince McMahon mahogany. He's I'd call him a hot on the Nando's heat scale. So there's two higher levels, but he's something. Also, he is jacked. He's just come back from injury. He came back from injury to an almighty pop by the Royal Rumble. Something I always maintain is Triple H has the loudest, most consistent pops, Royal Rumble to Royal Rumble to Royal Rumble. So he's returned, comes back to the garden, and is way too large.
It was a quadriceps injury that he'd had, wasn't it? And that was like, it was so innocuous. He was basically running across the ring and the muscle pulled off the bone on his leg. And instead of thinking, I'm too heavy for my frame, he just got even heavier.
Yes. To his credit, he tore his quadriceps and decided to finish the match, which involved him being put in the walls of Jericho.
I was going to say, it was in a match with Jericho, wasn't it? That was
In the tag match with Jericho.
Is that to his credit? That's a real wrestling way of looking at it, isn't it? Is it not more to his credit to say, hey, ref, throw up the X and maybe I'll be out for half the time?
That is a very much what would Harley Race do? In the when everyone talks about wrestling injuries, a lot of them go, Harley Race would keep fighting through the injury, so I'm going to do it. And from what I understand, doing that sort of thing that Triple H did gets you a couple of higher notches in the locker room. So Austin finished the match with a broken neck. Triple H did this. Triple H finished the Elimination Chamber with a crushed larynx, which is pretty much the injury when every time I decide I'm not going to become a wrestler. My friend goes, Triple H crushed his larynx. I'm like, no. So he is way too large. And this is a problem he has between now and a lot more of his shoots going forward. Up until about 22, really, he's far too large for his frame. So he's gassed very early on in this match, and it shows. He can't move the way he wants to. He can't reconnect and keep the pace of this match going, which, as Kerry said, it's a cooldown match now because the crowd is simply exhausted. So the match oddly deflates. It's got that very annoying thing the Attitude Era has where the McMahons and McMahon bickering gets in the way of what's the true action. So the true action should be Chris Jericho, who's always considered himself the underdog, has paired himself with this woman and is now going to become the next big bad demon of wrestling. And then the returning hero Triple H wants to defeat him. And it's this weird, as Anton said, divorced thing where you've got this guy who's the first ever undisputed champion and he's the least important person in this feud. This was when I was watching SmackDown week to week as well. And I was just going, well, Jericho's obviously going to lose because that's not the storyline. The storyline is Triple H versus Steph. It's just deflating. And he should have been deflated so he could wrestle better.
And also, just on finally on this, on that thing about carrying on the matches, Kerry, you think back to a couple of years ago when Triple H stopped a match involving Daniel Bryan because he got a stinger on Raw and Daniel Bryan was reportedly absolutely livid about that. It's kind of do what I say, not what I do kind of thing, isn't it?
It is. I mean, again, we have this kind of weird divide between Paul, who is a sensible human being and likes wrestling, and Triple H is an absolute bell end. I hate this attitude in wrestling that, you know, to be a proper real man's man and be a proper wrestler, you have to fight through injury. It's absolutely ridiculous. And this kind of self-sacrifice, and, you know, Lance Storm says a lot of really daft things, but one of the really sensible things that he said once, he was talking to Victoria on Twitter, and she was saying that she wanted to learn how to do, I think it's like a 450 splash or something. And he said, but you don't need it. And someone, a fan, had said, but people want to see that. And Lance Storm said, let the people risk their necks then. And yeah, this is exactly it. Wrestling, you know, it's a show. I don't want to see people actually get injured. And I think this kind of stiff upper lip, let's fight through major injuries and make them actually worse, it's not a good attitude to have.
Going back to this match, it is interesting as to how we view returning wrestlers. Because very few times does a wrestler return as a heel immediately. And when it does, it doesn't quite work.
Seth Rollins.
Yeah, so Seth Rollins one was a big one. Seth Rollins blows out his knee, comes back, cuts a promo. You know, I did my blew out my knee defending authority, etc., 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 and we're all cheering as well. You're going to be a face, and then he immediately switches. Great in the moment. The YouTube clip of him switching back to heel is fantastic, but then he just floundered for 4 or 5 months until eventually they redid the babyface push. This one is interesting because Triple H returns as babyface, as all returning wrestlers do, and it doesn't work because Triple H is a bastard. Babyface Triple H is weird. So he's too big. He's the wrong orientation for a fight. Jericho's not getting the right rub. The only person who's properly doing their job in this entire feud is Stephanie McMahon. And JR's in a very weird, shouty manner in this match. And all. Calm down, mate.
Well done. We've spent more time talking about that match than anybody in podcast history, so that's good. Next up, we'll move to Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Scott Hall. The story behind this, the NWO, as we've said, had joined the company to great fanfare earlier in the year. Vince McMahon famously announcing he was going to inject the WWF with a lethal dose of poison. Hogan did his thing with The Rock. Kevin Nash shockingly was injured, so he was by the side of Scott Hall, who jobbed out to Stone Cold in a very, very odd match. The finish of this supposedly changed at Austin's behest. He didn't like the match or the placing of it. That was obvious. Was he just struggling to accept that he wasn't the guy anymore? He was just in a match in this WrestleMania.
That's what I kind of thought. Again, so having not seen this WrestleMania as a whole before, I didn't read up about any of the stuff until afterwards. But yeah, I kind of got the feeling that no one actually wanted to be there watching this. I didn't really want to watch it, to be honest. Steve Austin is not the big star here. And I can imagine that would be something quite difficult for him to accept. It's stuffed in the middle of the card with Scott Hall.
Rock's just headlined three WrestleManias in the build up to this, and then he gets his Hogan match, whereas Stone Cold gets Scott Hall.
But apparently, Austin walks out on the company after this match. He didn't appear at Raw or SmackDown. He said since, I think it was on JR's podcast, he was offered the Hogan match and didn't want it. This was his quote: "Physically and mentally, where I was at, I could go. I think Hogan probably would have been a step or two behind that. That wasn't acceptable to me, and I didn't want to slow myself down. I say that with all due respect to Hulk Hogan, because he had a hellacious run." I mean, that's the ultimate backhanded compliment. But you think Steve Austin, generally a pretty shrewd businessman, would have seen a match with Hogan for what it was, i.e. putting a bit more in his pocket than a match with Scott Hall did. Is it just because he didn't like Hulk Hogan?
I think he didn't like Hulk Hogan. And also, there's a reason why Steve Austin hangs out with Roddy Piper a lot in WWE product, because they're quite similar characters. And Roddy Piper didn't like working with Hogan either, because he knew Hogan was never going to put him over. So I know Roddy Piper can see through Hogan's nonsense, and I think in the same way Stone Cold can see through Hogan's nonsense and therefore didn't want to work with him. This match is interesting because apparently this was very much the powers that be, Vince McMahon and Triple H, and very much going to Scott Hall, like, get clean. We're going to give you this match. Stay clean and that's it. You're good. You're done and dusted. We're going to keeping you within the company. And it didn't quite work. Scott Hall wasn't in a great place right at the time. You know, it took until very recently through the help of DDP and DDP Yoga that he has turned his life around somewhat. I will say, Scott Hall, that's the best Stone Cold Stunner sell in the business. I've never been a fan of the way The Rock does it. I think Scott Hall sells the stunner best because it makes sense in terms of how the move would work. So when he really, really, he takes the uppercut shoulder into his face and then flings himself backwards with great abandon. It's my favourite way to sell the stunner. And also, this whole feud just makes me wonder, this entire WrestleMania should have been WWE versus NWO. Like, don't mess around with sprinkle everything apart. Really, really set it up as you've got the WCW tape library, and then partway through the year, have NWO take over, have a couple NWO themed events as they looks like they're going to win, and then every single major babyface in WWE goes, all right, I'll have you. The Rock can have Hogan, Stone Cold can have Scott Hall, and then Kevin Nash's wheelchair can fight the hardcore legend in a very weird hardcore match. This WrestleMania is just all missed opportunities because it should have been WWE versus WCW.
And Anton, do you think they bought the NWO back in the way they bought WCW back, just to kind of kill it and make that people's lasting memory of it? Or was there actually a genuine desire for them to do something positive before they ended up putting Booker T and X-Pac and all these random people in it?
No, I thought he brought NWO back to get this Hulk Hogan moment. I thought it was the best way, storyline, to do it. He brings in Nash and he brings in Hall so you can, you know, see how popular they are and, you know, get a bit of a rub off them. But I think it was all about Hogan. I genuinely think it was all about Hogan. The whole thing was about trying to legitimise Rock as the ultimate babyface, as the ultimate guy for the company, and to use Hogan as the bad guy NWO, try to get WWE to own some of the NWO, so when people look back at that glorious time in wrestling history, they'll also look at WWE and not just WCW. This match contained one of the things that annoys me the most in wrestling, which is when a manager or a partner ringside and the ref just goes, "You're ejected," and they go, "Yeah, right, I'm off." Kevin Nash, you're 7 foot tall. Yeah. You've
take
already
me 20 minutes to get to the ring, mate. I'm not
exactly
walking back straight
and
away.
Then he just walks off, and then the match is lost. Come on, you're supposed to be the badass NWO that goes around spray painting people and smashing up ambulances and beating people up with cinder blocks. But if the ref says, "Get out," well, yeah, good point. I'll go. I'm not supposed to be here, am I? Maybe I did overstep the mark. Utterly ridiculous.
Right, we're just getting started on the road to reliving WrestleMania 18. Stick around, more Parts Unknown next.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Next up, two old dudes with a fondness for the blade tangle as The Undertaker defeated Ric Flair in a no DQ match to go 10-0 at WrestleMania. Taker had goaded Flair, who at this point supposedly owned half the company, into the match by beating up his son David and Arn Anderson in the build-up. Heel Taker was a nasty so-and-so at this stage in his career. This was actually the longest match of the night at nearly 19 minutes. Sloppy in places, compelling in others. Carrie, what did you make of it?
No, I hated this. I'm increasingly hating The Undertaker. I know I feel like I'm doing this every single episode we do now, and I'm just slagging off The Undertaker. He's really boring. It takes ages to get anything done. No. 19 minutes. No. No one wants that. No.
There's something different about Biker Taker, because Dead Man, Ethereal Undertaker in a squash match is, you've got the human afraid of just the passing sands of time. So when Edge is running away from, like, Dead Man Undertaker, that's fine. That's Shakespearean. Biker Taker is just the nightclub bouncer. So you've got 19 minutes of a nightclub bouncer panning in an old man. And I'm like, I don't like this. This is horrendous and violent. There's a bit in comms where JR goes to Jerry Lawler, how can you enjoy the misery of others? And that's this match. How can I get happy about a biker beat up an old man?
Good point. Anton, 92, the combined age of these two at this time. Would it have been worth, like, one of them facing, like, I don't know, Christian or Maven or somebody like that, and maybe putting somebody over rather than just, you know, there's nothing worse in wrestling than blonde-haired Ric Flair covered in blood, I think, and it was just kind of gross.
There should always be a sweepstakes, and how long does it take for Ric Flair to get cut open? So he's cut open within, like, 3 or 4 minutes into this match. I completely agree with everything the guys have said. It's great to see Flair still has the ability to go at it, but we say that every week, and it's just, you're right, Biker Taker, it's just, vroom, vroom, takes ages, it's just the same old thing, and it's really annoying, and the only thing I liked about this match is when Flair kind of reverses old school and JR says, you got jerked off the ropes, and I maybe giggle. Other than that, the match is utterly forgettable.
At WrestleMania 17, we'll be covering that in detail next week. Kurt Angle faced Chris Benoit in a match without any build after he'd lost the title to The Rock at No Way Out the previous month. Here the pattern repeated, but with Kane in the opposite corner. This after Angle had lost the Mania title shot to Triple H a month prior. The match might have had a flat bill, but Angle, phenomenal performer at this point in his career, able to make chicken salad out of chicken chisel, as they say.
Yeah, Kurt Angle is amazing, isn't he? I think we're all kind of becoming more and more Kurt Angle fans as we go backwards through WrestleManias as well. Yeah, a Kane match that I wanted to watch. Imagine, it was a special moment for me. No, I really enjoyed this one.
How about that spot, Carl, where Angle just sprints up, and I mean sprints up the top turnbuckle and gives a top rope suplex. It's like, wow.
There's a bit near the end where he takes a kick to the head, sells immediately, and then Kane goes to, like, capitalize, and he grabs it and he twists it, and oh god, everything is crisp and clean and with the right amount of viciousness to it. Kurt Angle has this amazing thing that Bret Hart does a lot in SummerSlam matches, where he is facing someone a lot bigger than him, and he goes, right, I'm going to chop you down like you're a tree. And he's like, yeah, Kurt Angle's one of the very few wrestlers who looks capable of cognizant thought in a match, of just, he will look at Kane, look around the ring, go, and that's my game plan, and now I'm going to go off and do it. Which is, Seth Rollins is quite good at as well, of just wrestlers who are doing the cartoon version of pacing up and down, and then going, are fantastic baby faces.
Anton, by the time this goes out, Glenn Jacobs will be in position as the mayor of Knox County. What do you think will have been first on his intray?
I mean, the potholes in Knox County are awful.
Yeah.
So obviously he's got to look into that.
Bins too.
But yeah.
I just like this image of him like chairing a meeting going, so people want recycling moved to Tuesdays, but logistically that's going to be tough to make work. Hellfire and brimstone, something like that.
And also, it's just he's still dressed like corporate Kane, which makes me laugh anyway. It's absolutely brilliant. I really, really enjoyed this match. It starts off with Kurt doing dissing Olympic skaters in Toronto, which is brilliant. It then starts with a ring bell because Angle knows he needs to, like you said, chop him down quickly. It's brutal. It's silly. He uses the ropes to win. It's just great wrestling entertainment.
So the show opened with an intercontinental title bout. JR wasn't sure if the title was on the line as they were making their way to the ring, but it was. Champion William Regal defending against Rob Van Dam. RVD had been white hot when he first joined the company as part of Team ECW in the bungled invasion angle from the year before. He'd been cooled off by this point, hence the curtain jerkery. Regal, often quite an awkward opponent for American wrestlers, but this was actually quite a decent match, I thought.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was quite interesting to see that kind of clash of styles between kind of Regal's more orthodox mat wrestling and Rob Van Dam looking to get his spots in. I love William Regal, and I thought it was really nice to see him kind of getting a WrestleMania moment. I know you said kind of curtain jerkery, but that's often kind of a really cool place to be on because you're first on and it's kind of a moment that you remember. I thought the spot that he had with the trunks and the brass knuckles was a bit weird because it took so long it looked like he was just playing with himself. But, you know, apart from that, I thought, you know, Regal's always a great villain. And it's kind of interesting to see that kind of clash with how he's a general manager who's always a good guy now. He kind of plays by the rules and he kind of has discipline with his roster. And, yeah, seeing him play around with the brass knuckles is always funny too.
We're kind of quite big on JR around this stage. I wonder if he's a little bit lazy on this WrestleMania. The old educated feet line about RVD, one went to Harvard, one went to Yale, daddy must be so proud. He said that in pretty much every match he had in the company. Next week, we're going to talk about Heyman being on commentary. Is it just that him and Lawler are too comfortable with each other? So Lawler would never push JR in the way that Heyman did to kind of be better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's quite a few moments in this WrestleMania where Lawler seems to ask JR an idle question. And they do it very often in WrestleManias where there's a quiet moment. They go, so what do you think about this wrestler? And you go, call the match. Don't just call the match. They're really odd together sometimes. And this WrestleMania feels as if they don't quite enjoy each other's company. There's a particular moment in the women's match that I'll come back to where you can feel JR's just going, shut up, Lawler. Which, you know, to be fair, shut up, Lawler.
Anton, if you look at RVD's WWE career as a whole, obviously he was very, very briefly WWE champion. He won the WWE and ECW belts and then got arrested, didn't he, with Sabu on a drugs bust, got it taken off him. Was his run in the company a success given his status in ECW before? Did he kind of do better than maybe he should have? He had, what, three separate spells with the company and did all right?
Best. Now Undertaker's lost at WrestleMania. RVD has the best unbeaten streak at WrestleMania. He's 5-0.
I was all in it on RVD at the time. I loved his music. I loved the Firestar Frog Splash. I loved his kind of laid back kind of attitude. I loved when they'd go backstage and he'd be sort of, doing the splits across two chairs and sort of stretching and that kind of thing. And I love the kind of implied stoner that he was, which he kind of was at the time when he got pulled over by the police. But I was all in on it. But at the same time, would I have bought him as the sort of poster boy? No. So I think actually he had a decent run in WWE and they kind of got him as far as he could. A guy that clearly sort of wasn't willing to stay within the boundaries of the wellness policy, shall we say? And if you can't, in a corporate environment, you can't have that in the company. So I feel as though he had a decent run.
Great interview with RVD in an old issue of Power Slam. Shout out to Finn Martin, where he says about Triple H, if it wasn't for wrestling, I doubt we'd have anything in common. Like, yeah, I kind of see what you mean there. So those two were followed on the card by DDP and Christian. They squared off with Paige's European title on the line. DDP was trying to mentor Christian out of his tantrum phase, but Christian had shockingly turned on the former WCW stalwart on the Raw before Mania. I quite like this. And of course, we had Christian's magnificent
Christian!
Music. Yeah! for this one.
No, I love this. I've got lots of little heart emojis in my notes. Christian looks like Triple H in this match. I don't know whether else can see that, whether it's just me. I just kept having to double take and thinking he looks like Triple H now. I thought that was strange.
In a fishnet top gurning.
maybe it was the gurning. Maybe that's it. DDP. I love the DDP. And yeah, I thought, yeah, this is a fun little match. And, you know, I kind of watch it now with the retrospective knowledge about how much Vince hates Christian. And I was like, Christian's good. This is fun. When he's given stuff to do, then he can do it. And it's also interesting to see him without Edge as well at this point. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
At last he was on his own.
Oh, that music is wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. But again, going back to the computer game, because I was, you know, a sad 16-year-old when I was playing it, would make myself, obviously, a wrestler, because, you know, you do. And I would use either Christian's music or Christian's entrance, because he had the pyro that came from above and down below, like rain as well. It just looked fantastic. The further I go back, the more I appreciate Christian.
He's the great missing main eventer, because he's like, his apex was in TNA, so you missed when he was at his best. But there is so much great stuff from Christian that I'm surprised more wrestlers aren't nicking stuff from. In the same way that everyone nicks stuff from Chris Jericho, there is so much stuff you can nick from Christian. Like, he called his fans peeps. That's brilliant.
And also, it was around this time when Triple H came back from his injury, as you mentioned, at the Royal Rumble. They did this hype video for his return set to Beautiful Day by U2, and they played it ad nauseum. And Christian was backstage with, I think it was Edge or somebody else. And he just said, where was Triple H during this whole invasion angle? Probably sat at home spinning U2 records. Like, he probably came up with that himself. It's really good. Carl, you and I are both exponents of DDP yoga. It's really painful, I think. Have you managed to crack it?
It's really painful. It's really good. My wrestler friend, who I talk to about a lot, does it every single day. He looks a bit like the bad guy in Die Hard 2 when he does it. Very like concentrated. DDP is great. He wrote a letter to his younger self on the Players Tribune. It's quite long, like a 5,000 word essay, where he writes to himself when he was 16 after he got hit by a bus and he'd done his knee. So the reason he got into wrestling at the age of 42 is he used to be a manager, trained to be a wrestler at 27, blew out both of his knees, went to go be a manager, gets drunk with everyone, most notably Scott Hall.
Who didn't?
Yeah. And then at the age of 42, in his 30s? Basically, at a very, very late age, decided to get into it. And he's just so nice, so friendly. He credits everything to John Laurinaitis for giving him the diamond cut. And there's a bit when Triple H's career, just when he was starting in WWE, where Triple H used the diamond cut as a transition move. DDP phoned him up and went, hey, you're a lot more handsome, smarter, and athletic than me. Could you not use that? Because that, like, the diamond cut is my meal ticket. And Triple H goes, yeah, fine. That was that. So,
and he successfully sued Jay-Z, didn't he, for trying to pinch the diamond cutter off him?
He did indeed. Also, in this match, he says thank you to Christian when he pins him, which, again, wrestlers saying thank you to each other always makes my heart melt.
I've spent a bit of time with DDP last year, interviewed him over the phone, and then he came over to do his DDP yoga workshop and sort of personal speaking tour and that kind of thing. And I spoke to him on the phone sort of to do a phone interview with him. It's about half an hour chatting with him, and he's just, I barely got a word in, but he's not going to interrupt. He's wonderful raconteur going on. But clearly, like a muffled phone line from the States, he's like, you know, so I introduced myself. And he just referred to me for the whole thing as Axel. Didn't correct him at all. So when I met him in London, I was like, hi, I'm Anton, or Axel. He was like, Axel, good to see you. Big hug. I still couldn't correct him, even in the flesh. I was just, actually, Axel's quite cool. No one else would call me Axel.
Well, I think we'll call you Axel from this point on. Of course, they made the reference to the fact that he'd driven chauffeured Honky Tonk Man down the aisle at six in this venue as well. So very nice. There was a women's match on this card. It was in the traditional come-down spot between the two big matches, Hogan Rock and then Trips versus Jericho. Jazz retained the women's title over Lita and Canadian Trish Stratus, who was draped in the maple leaf. Doctor, at least there were no bra and panties in sight, apart from Lita's thong, of course.
Well, there's that. These poor women. So they kind of, as you say, put on in that spot after Hogan and Rock. So the epitome of the cool-down spot. Jazz is working her ass off in this match. Trish is bumping like hell, although she's still very green. I think that's quite interesting to see Trish get worse and worse week by week as we're going through these WrestleManias. Trish's Titantron has nothing of her actually wrestling, I noticed. So that was interesting. And Lita, I mean, God love her. She's so choreographed as well. I think particularly in a triple threat where you've got to kind of time everything so you've got the right people in the ring at the right time. It's all very, very kind of step by step, making sure she's kind of counting and doing her steps in the right place. It wasn't bad, but, you know, you've got not very much time and no one really wants to watch these poor women. So, yeah, what can you do?
Anyone else got anything to say on a match already being described as having happened on this card?
There's a bit where Lawler goes to JR. Look at Jazz. Do you like her? JR goes, what? He goes, do you like her? And JR goes, I think she's an incredible athlete and a fantastic performer. Basically, fuck off. Your racial coding is disgusting. And I'm not going to answer whether or not you think I think she's sexually attractive. Like, go away.
The hardcore title was still a thing in 2002. Treat it as a joke here. First, the champion Maven and Goldust faced off for the belt with Spike Dudley winning. Yeah. Then throughout the night, various wrestlers would take advantage of the 24/7 rule. That meant that the belt was on the line at all times. Hurricane Helms, Mighty Molly, Christian, and finally Maven again all claimed the title at various points throughout the evening. Anton, why?
Bring it back.
But if you brought it back, would you include the 24/7 rule?
Absolutely.
Would you?
Because you've got a running theme through every single episode of Raw that something can happen. So apparently there was a house show where the hardcore title changed 17 times.
It's exhausting.
You just get it back to the person at the end, and it keeps going. I mean, nothing of consequence happens episode to episode because the person can win all the time. But it's just hilariously fun to watch everyone beat each other up backstage.
I'd bring it back for a pay-per-view or for a tournament or something. I couldn't deal with that every week. I genuinely find it exhausting of sort of no names sort of coming out of nowhere, hitting someone and then running off. And it's just sneak attack after... It's panto guerrilla warfare.
It's great.
It's not. It's great for a bit. And then like, again...
You give everyone on the lower to mid card something to do, and then every now and again you put on the mid card person, and they legitimize it or whatever, and then off you go. It's as important as you want it to be.
How popular was Maven at the time? His pop was huge.
Well, I want somebody to explain Maven to people. We've had lots of lovely reviews. If you want to do that on iTunes, give us a 5-star. That'd be great. But somebody said maybe go into a bit more detail about these random people that newer people might not know. Tell us, Anton, how Maven came to be in WWF.
So Maven was the first ever Tough Enough champion. So Tough Enough was sort of WWE's first real dip into the reality TV, and they tried to find the next superstar in a kind of Ultimate Fighter light kind of way. Where they would pit them all in the ring and one would be eliminated a week in, week out, and they'd had trainers and that kind of thing to sort of whittle them down. And Maven was the guy. He was a school teacher that sort of always wanted to be a wrestler. And, you know, he was very much kind of plucky young man with a mild-mannered chap who was perfectly likable, but, I mean, he was just so green. But he was so popular, they stuck him in the ring.
No charisma.
Yeah, nothing at all. But he was really popular because he just seemed like a nice chap. And that's what reality TV gets you a lot of the time. And in the 90s especially, you know, you look back at the early Big Brothers, being like when Craig won it and that kind of thing. A lot of the time it was nice people that won because, you know, it wasn't quite the panto it is today. It wasn't the ridiculous sort of, you know, apprentice style, horrific people all trying to outdo each other by being as awful as possible. It was, you know, it was nice people doing relatively boring things. And that's what Maven was.
It's interesting to compare Maven, who won the first Tough Enough, to The Miz or Daniel Puder, who won, I think, the second or third one. In terms of Maven was great. They gave him those opportunities. They gave him the I know it's meant to be a rub, where he eliminated The Undertaker from the Royal Rumble, and then The Undertaker just beat the snot out of him.
Kind of hard to watch after a while.
Very hard to watch. He's very clearly concussed. It gives him a completely unprotected chair shot. And they gave him a lot and multiple rubs, but the guy had none of the intangibles, to use a Bret Hart phrase. Yeah, but from what I can say, he's gone back to teaching and is a thoroughly nice person, does the convention circuit, and thoroughly nice, but he wouldn't... If you met him again, Anton, and he called you Axel, you'd be like, actually, My name's Anton.
That's true. Sorry, Raven, but my name's Anton. Yeah. Now, what better way, Kerry, to ignite a feud than to have two wrestlers squabble over the right to claim an advertising deal for a non-existent Japanese shampoo? That's the storyline that Booker T and Edge were given to work with. Kind of a travesty, given that they'd trumpeted the fact that Edge was the hometown guy who'd been in attendance at WrestleMania 6. Booker T was kind of pretending that he was intelligent on his pre-match interview about Einstein's theory of relativeness?
Relatives.
Yeah, you can have two theories. My other question, right, this is about shampoo. Why wasn't it a hair versus hair match?
That's an excellent question. I feel like I'm missing some kind of major rib with this entire setup, this entire match, this entire storyline.
This is just about the time where more people have internet at home, and we're beginning to find out that Brad Pitt and George Clooney have been doing all these sorts of adverts in Japan at the same time. So it's the beginning of Brad Pitt's been doing what? I think that's the rib.
Zeitgeist. Yeah.
But there is a bit right at the start of the match where someone just puts up a sign going, they are fighting over shampoo.
Luckily for Booker T, though, he'll have a much better experience at WrestleMania 19. Right, we're wrapping up now. Quick mention to the fatal four-way tag team title match, which saw Billy and Chuck retain over the APA, the Hardy Boys, and the Dudley Boys, accompanied by Stacey Keibler. Anton, you did a good job with Maven. Please explain for our younger listeners Billy and Chuck.
Oh, God, that's a difficult one. Right, so, I mean, it's... I think Lawler kind of described it in a way. So they were peroxide blonde, kind of... They were sold as a kind of boy band-esque kind of competitors.
Billy Gunn, who you might remember from DX, Chuck Palumbo, coming from WCW.
However, there was an exceptionally uncomfortable, homosexual shaming about this whole thing. And then you got Lawler saying backseat boys, calling them backseat boys, and JR saying they enjoy a tag team. And the whole thing was very uncomfortable. But, you know, and Chuck wasn't particularly good in the ring either, which didn't really help either. It's really difficult to sort of, you know, kind of really sort of root for them when they're really just joke characters in the ring, as well as, you know, what they're made to be out in personality as well. So, well, not exactly another glorious part of WWE's history. This match wasn't exactly a glorious part of WWE's history, considering the Access VT going into it. So the VT before was about all the fans having great fun at WWE Access at WrestleMania, which included a cast of Stacey Keibler's arse and legs, to which she says, it was a bit weird seeing people going around and touching my butt and legs. And you're thinking, yeah, I think that is definitely weird, seeing like what wet gel wearing sort of basement dwelling men sort of slapping, fingering and drooling over an exact cast of your arsehole that is in their wank bank, isn't it? That is absolutely disgusting.
Just on this, it's worth rounding out the Billy and Chuck thing. So they were supposed to get married, weren't they, on SmackDown in September of this year. They were going to have a wedding, but then it was revealed that it was a ruse and they were in fact straight. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation had sort of teamed up with WWE in the build up to this to kind of go, hey, well, yeah, you want to do something positive, great. They then watched the angle and released a statement saying the WWE lied to us 2 months ago when they promised that Billy and Chuck would come out and wed on the air. So it's just another case of kind of give with one hand, take with the other. We're gonna do something good. No, we're not. Eric Bischoff's gonna dress up as a vicar and laugh at you.
Oh, it's awful, and I'm not necessarily a huge fan of everything that GLAAD have ever done, but I think in this circumstance, they're probably right to be very vociferously objecting to the way the WWE treated this storyline. The fact that it was kind of turned around as a joke, as a ruse, is particularly galling, I think.
Well, that was that. A night where the veterans stole the spotlight again. Hogan, Hunter and The Undertaker, the big winners on a real mixed bag of a show. WrestleMania moments. I'm struggling, Carrie. Have you got one?
I haven't got a moment per se, but one thing that I did kind of note throughout this show was the fact they kept having these musical interludes telling the story of matches. It was essentially like a very badly done piece of musical theatre the entire way through, which I think is certainly something that makes it stand out from other WrestleManias, in that it was terrible.
Carl?
It's the moment where The Rock takes the microphone from Coach, pushes Coach aside, and then turns to the camera to tell the audience what the storyline is. And I was watching it, taking my notes, and the moment The Rock turns his head, I was dropped my pen, transfixed. Yeah. I'm like, yes, you will be the highest grossing actor in Hollywood one day. You are amazing when you want the attention, aren't you?
Shortly after, Coach had begun his prayer with "What up, G?" Of course, let us not forget that. Anton, have you got a WrestleMania moment? Was it that?
No, it is. Go back and watch Austin and Hall if you can, if you really want to, for the greatest ref slide in history.
That's mine.
Oh no, Jack Jones ref slide. It is absolutely. He almost slides across the entire ring throughout the other side. It's incredible. Sorry, Matt.
No, that's fine. We can share it. While you're there, Anton, tell us your Twitter handle.
At SkyAnton.
And Carl.
Anchorman 616.
And Carrie.
At Carrie Sparkle.
And we are at the PU Podcast. I'm at Matt Davis FC. Now, I'm not a man prone to hyperbole, but next week we'll be discussing the greatest show in the history of professional wrestling. It's WrestleMania 17, Stone Cold versus The Rock 2, Taker and Trips beginning their own Mania trilogy, Shane and Vince bludgeoning each other like brothers, and there's the unforgettable TLC match for the tag titles. All that and more up for debate next week. But until then, thanks for your company. Rate, review, share and subscribe. Please. I've been Matt Davis Adams. You've been in Parts Unknown.
The Parts Unknown Wrestling Podcast is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddykneesmedia.com.